And we have examined in our previous sermons what the book of Daniel revealed in chapters 2 and in chapter 7. Let's go ahead and review those two chapters in the next couple of minutes so that we can come up to speed with what we're going to be doing today. In Daniel chapter 2, we had the image, the great image, and it talked about the head of gold being Babylon. It talked about the chest and arms of silver, which were the Medes and the Persians, the right hand and the left hand. Talked about the midsection, the stomach, the groin area, brass or bronze, depending on which translation you're using, being the Greek Empire. And then the Roman Empire being the iron legs, the two divisions. And then we had the ten toes, which were going to be kings that would give, unite together for a very short time. And they would then be destroyed by the stone that came out of heaven without hands. It was a supernatural stone. The stone would strike the toes, the ten toes. So we know the ten toes are contemporary because they all are killed by the returning Christ, so they're all destroyed. The stone doesn't strike the Babylonian kingdom, the Medo-Persian, the Greek, or the Roman kingdom. It strikes the ten toes. And the ten toes, we've always assumed and believed because of scriptures, that the ten toes represent what I term the coming United States of Europe, which we're beginning to see forming in Europe right now. There's pressure from immigration from various other Muslim countries. There's religious pressure and various other political pressure for Europe to unite. And that's one of the things that we need to keep our eyes on, is a unification of Europe. And when that happens, it's only going to be for a short time, then we know that we're extremely close. So that was the overview of chapter 2. Chapter 7, we had the four beasts coming up out of the sea. We had the first beast that was a lion, man's heart given to it, wings stood on his feet, man's understanding. We understand that was Nebuchadnezzar, his years-long insanity, coming back to his senses, and he was the king, representative of the kingdom, represented by this lion. In Babylonian art and Babylonian excavations that they've made, the lion with the wings is a common motif. It's a common symbol. Just like the eagle is a symbol of the United States, the dragon is a symbol of the Oriental countries. Many countries have animalistic mascots or representations. And for Babylon, it was the lion with the wings on the back. Also had a human head. And there are some scholars that believe these were the cherubim as in heaven, and that this is what the Babylonians got this motif from. But whether it came from heaven or whether it was inspired by man's own imagination, we don't know. But we do know that the lion represented the Babylonian kingdom. After the lion, we had the bear. On one side higher than the other, symbolizing the Medes and the higher-rising dominant Persians. Three ribs in its mouth. The Lydians, Babylon, and Egypt being overcome and destroyed by the Medo-Persians, symbolizing the three ribs. And then we have the leopard with the four heads. We talked about what the four heads represented. And then after that, an exceedingly terrible beast. No animalistic pattern for that. It was so terrible. Had one head and ten horns. The ten horns, three of them were cast down by a little horn that came up among them. And so we understand that the little horn tried to change times and laws. We understand that's the Roman Church or the papacy. And they persecuted the saints down through the Middle Ages and are going to persecute the saints again at the time of the end. And so there's a little horn that appears among this. The little horn is destroyed at Christ's return. So that's the overview of the last two chapters we've been looking at in Daniel. We also looked at the 70 weeks prophecy, and we'll get back to that later on. But the last two chapters, that's the overview. Today in this sermon, we are going to look at the prophecy in Daniel chapter 8. Now, this prophecy involves a ram and a he-goat or a billy goat and various horns. And today we're going to understand what these symbols mean. Now, when we look at Daniel chapter 2 and we look at Daniel chapter 7, that follows the same general outline. And that is that the vision or the dream is told and then it is interpreted. And in Daniel chapter 8, the same pattern is followed. This dream is one that Daniel dreamed, or this is a vision that Daniel had. And in the first part of the chapter, Daniel tells us what the vision was. You know, the ram and the goats and the horns and all of this. He doesn't interpret it. Then, beginning about verse 15, Gabriel the angel interprets the vision for him. And so we don't have to interpret the vision. All we got to do is read the vision in the first 14 verses of Daniel chapter 8 and then look at what Gabriel says the interpretation is. So the first thing we're going to do in this sermon is we're going to look at what the vision is. We're going to understand what happened during the vision. So we're going to begin to read in Daniel chapter 8, verse 1. This was in the third year of the reign of King Belteshazzar. This is not a dream, but a vision appeared to me, Daniel, after the vision that appeared to me the first time, which was in Daniel chapter 7. I saw in the vision, and it so happened while I was looking that I was in Shushan, the citadel, capital, which is in the province of Elam, and I saw in a vision that I was by the river Ulai. There I lifted up my eyes, and I saw there standing beside the river a ram. Now this ram has two horns. Now let me just mention, and we're going to see that this it's interpreted in verse 20. The ram which you saw having the two horns, they're the kings of the Medes and the Persians. And then in verse 21, it talks about the goat being Greece and the first king. So in chapter 8, verse 3, this two-horned ram is the Medo-Persian Empire. Now it pertains to, in Daniel chapter 2, it pertains to the arms and chest of silver. And it pertains in Daniel chapter 7 to the second beast, which was the bear. Now if you look on your chart, you'll see that these line up. In the ram, we have the breast and chest of silver in Daniel 2. And in Daniel 7, we have the second beast, which was the bear. So this is another symbol of the Persian Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, in here in Daniel chapter 8, verse 3. Now there are two horns. The reason there's two horns is because there were two parts to the kingdom, the Medes and the Persians. And notice the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one was the second one, and it came up last. So here's what you have. You have a horn that's high. You have the second horn that's high, but it's higher, but it came up second, symbolizing the Medes that were in the kingdom at first and the Persians that came into the kingdom later and dominated the kingdom. So the political order of the Medes and the Persians is shown in how these horns arise. Verse 4, I saw the ram, it was pushing everywhere, westward, northward, southward. It's pushing towards the four arrows of the compass. No animal or other kingdom could withstand him, nor was there any that could deliver from his hand, but he did according to his will, and he became great. So this two-horned ram became very great. Became very great. And I was contemplating the ram, and as I was considering suddenly, a male goat came from the west across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground. Now, do you remember in Daniel chapter 7, we had the leopard, and the leopard, which is very fast, had wings so it could fly. And so this is symbolized here by the description given in verse 5. A male goat came from the west. The Greek Empire was west from the Medo-Persian Empire. Across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground. Have you ever seen a billy goat? And he's charging right before he butts you. His legs leave the ground. And he flies at whatever he's trying to hit. This is what was happening here. So this billy goat, or this he goat, is going to ram the ram. He's going to butt the ram without touching the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. So this goat has one horn. Now we understand that a horn symbolizes a kingdom. So there's a horn and it symbolizes a kingdom. There was only one of them. This was a very unusual goat. Didn't have two horns. It had one. Then he came to the ram. The goat came to the ram. The Greek Empire came to the Medo-Persian Empire that had the two horns, which I had seen standing beside the river. And he ran at him with furious power. So there's a war that's going to go on. And I saw the goat confronting the ram. The goat was moved with rage against the ram. He attacked the ram and broke his two horns, which means he overcame the kingdom. There was no power in the ram to withstand him, and he cast him down to the ground, and he trampled on him. So not only did he break his horns, but he trampled all over him with his hooves. And there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand. So the goat destroys the ram with the two horns. This goat has one horn when the destruction happens. Then he tramples on the ram, and there's nothing left of the ram. Verse 8, therefore the male goat grew very great. But when he was at the height of his power, but when he became strong, the large horn, which represents a king or a kingdom, was broken, and its place, four notable ones came up towards the four winds of heaven. So you have this ram with two horns, both high. The second horn comes up last but higher. You have a he-goat, a billy goat, with one horn, notable, very high it says. And the goat charges the ram, breaks its two horns, stomps on him, and reduces him to nothing. And at the height of the power of the goat, the one horn that represented the first king or the first kingdom, that's broken, and four horns come up in its place. Verse 9, and out of one of them, out of the them is referring to the horns, out of one of the horns came a little horn. You remember in Daniel chapter 7, there was a little horn? There's another little horn here. Came up out of one of the horns. Let's see. Verse 9. And out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great towards the south, towards the east, and towards the glorious land. The glorious land is the promised land. Israel, Judah, Jerusalem, that area there. And it, the little horn, grew up to the host of heaven. The host of heaven is the stars. And cast down some of the host and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. We're going to see what this means later on. For he even, this is still the little horn even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host. Now, from a physical perspective, the prince of the host was the high priest, from a physical perspective. And we're reading in verse 11, he exalted himself as high as the prince of the host, and by him, by the little horn, the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of the prince of the host sanctuary was cast down. So the prince of the host, the high priest, had a sanctuary, and the little horn that came out of the four horns that were taking the place of the one horn, the little horn caused the sacrifices of the sanctuary to stop. Because of transgression an army was given over to the little horn to oppose the daily sacrifices. And he, the little horn, cast truth down to the ground. He did all this and prospered. Then I heard a holy one, some kind of angelic being, speaking to another angelic being. And he said, how long is this going to go on? How long is the vision concerning the daily sacrifices and the transgression of desolation and the giving of both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot? How long is the sanctuary going to be desecrated? And how long are the stars or the hosts that are associated with the sanctuary going to be cast down, trampled underfoot? Verse 14, and he said to me, for 2,300 days, then the sanctuary will be cleansed. Now, the Seventh-day Adventists believe that this is the heavenly sanctuary. I'll show you that in a minute, that it is not. Another thing is, in verse 14, it talks about 2,300 days. If you look on the marginal rendering, the days, it's got a little notation that says evenings and mornings. So what he's saying is, for 2,300 evening and morning sacrifices. That's how many times, because the sacrifices were offered twice a day, and the sacrifice is not going to be offered anymore. How long is this? For 2,300 of these sacrifices. That's the context. So if there's sacrifices offered twice a day, and there's 2,300 of them, then we're looking at 1,150 days that this vision is for. All right, so there is the vision that Daniel saw. Repetition is the best form of education. Let's repeat what we found out. Daniel sees in a vision. He sees a ram with two horns. Both of the horns are high. The second horn comes up last, but it's higher than the first. While this ram is at the height of its power, it pushes west, south, all over the place. Nothing can withstand it. And then, while it's at the height of its power, there's a billy goat or a he-goat with one horn. The billy goat runs across the surface of the earth, jumps at the ram, almost like if it's flying, and destroys the ram, breaks its two horns, and stomps and tramples all over him. While the goat is doing this, he's at the height of his power, the one horn is broken. Four horns are put in its place. Now, out of one of the horns comes a little horn. And the little horn starts to persecute the host of heaven and the prince of the host, which is the high priest. So we're talking about the people that are associated with the high priest. The sanctuary of the high priest is, or the sanctuary of the prince of the host is desecrated, and sacrifices are no longer offered. Two angels are discussing this, and one says, how long is this going to go on? And one of them says, 2,300 evening and morning sacrifices, which is 1,150 days. That's what the vision was. Now, we don't have to interpret it. I've already interpreted it for you a little bit because I've read ahead. But let's read ahead and see what the interpretation is. Verse 15, then it happened when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and was seeking the meaning. You know, Daniel's not like a bunch of people that they read a vision. Oh, I can tell you exactly what that means. Daniel says, I don't know what is going on here. What does this vision mean? And was seeking the meaning in verse 15, that suddenly there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. And I heard a voice between the banks of the Ulai, who called and said, Gabriel, make this man understand the vision. So Daniel sees this human form. And this human form, there's a voice that comes from the river and says, Gabriel, tell him what the vision means. So obviously, this is the angel Gabriel. So Gabriel is giving Daniel the interpretation of this dream. Verse 17, so he, Gabriel, came near where I stood, and when he came near, I was afraid and fell on my face. But he said, understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. So this vision is referring to the events that are going to occur at the time of the end. Now, as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep with my face to the ground, but he touched me and I stood upright. And he said, look, I am making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of the indignation, for at the appointed time the end shall be. So all of these things are for a later time, and what's appointed to happen is going to happen right on schedule. That's what he's saying. No interpretation needed. The ram which you saw having the two horns, the Medes and the Persians. Once again, the Medes dominate, the Medes establish the kingdom. The Persians come in and ally themselves with the Medes secondarily, and they become greater than the Medes at the beginning. The horn coming up, the second horn coming up higher and coming up second. And the male goat is the kingdom of Greece. All right, now mine has a little marginal rendering there on 21, and it says king. So it's really, verse 21, the male goat is the king of Greece. The first king of Greece was Alexander the Great. He was the first king. He united all of the Greek city-states and made an empire. And that was Alexander the Great. The large horn that is between its eyes is the first king. As for the broken horn and the four that stood up in its place, four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, but not with its power. So there was this one great horn that was Alexander the Great. It's broken, and four come up, but not as great as that one after Alexander the Great's death. Alexander the Great died in a drunken orgy. He drank himself to death. Wanted to rule the world, but couldn't rule himself. So he dies. He's about 32, 33 years old when he dies. And he dies, and the kingdom is divided up among four of his generals. Now, in verse 22, it talks about the broken horn, the death of Alexander the Great, the four that stood up in his place. Four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, but not with its power. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, it's got to get a lot worse, brethren, because we haven't seen this happen yet. A king shall arise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. So we got this evil king that's going to rise later on. This is represented by what? The little horn. That's talking about the little horn. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He's going to have some help. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Who are the holy people? Well, in the time of Daniel and afterwards, they were the Jewish people. In the time of the end, they're going to be God's people in Israel. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Verse 25, through his cunning, he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule, and he shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes. The prince of princes is Jesus Christ. He shall even rise against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without human means. So he shall supernaturally come to his end. So let me now review what Gabriel says this vision means. And then we're going to go to some other parts of the Bible and examine some things. Gabriel says, Gabriel is told to make Daniel know what this dream means. Gabriel says to Daniel that the ram is the Medes and the Persians. Gabriel also tells Daniel that the goat is the king of Greece, and the great horn in the middle are the kings of Greece, and the great horn in the middle of his head is the first king, which we know historically is Alexander the Great. Now, in verse 22, the horn is broken, and four horns come up in its place. Then our view shifts to the little horn in verse 23. Sinister, dark, evil, power but not his own. He persecutes the mighty and the holy people. He destroys wonderfully. And the last part of verse 25, he's going to even rise against the prince of princesses. And then he's going to be broken without human means. Some kind of supernatural event's going to occur that's going to destroy him. That's what we're looking at in this vision. Now, let's look at the four divisions. If you're taking notes, when Alexander the Great died, look in your history book or look online and say Alexander the Great's death division. See what you bring up. It'll bring up the following. There was one division, which was Greece and Macedonia. It was ruled by Cassander. That was one of the little horns, one of the horns. There was another division, Asia Minor, ruled by Lysimachus. That was the second horn. The third was Egypt and Palestine, ruled by Ptolemy. And the fourth, the last horn, was Syria, Babylonia, the eastern part of India, east to India, ruled by Seleucus. Now, out of one of these divisions comes a ruler that was named Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes, short for Antiochus Epiphanes. He comes out of the fourth kingdom, out of the fourth horn. You can look at it historically. Now, it's very interesting what Antiochus Epiphanes did. Antiochus Epiphanes did some very interesting things. But before we look at what he did, let's notice something about the little horn. The little horn is mentioned in Daniel chapter 8. Daniel chapter 8, verse 9. And out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great towards the south, towards the east, and towards the glorious land. And it's also mentioned in verse 22. As for the broken horn and the four that stood in its place, four nations shall arise out of that, but not with its power. And then it starts talking about the little horn in verse 23 and what's going to happen. Now, keep your place in Daniel chapter 8. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 7, back probably a page. In Daniel chapter 7, in verse 8, notice what it says. You remember that there was the four beasts in Daniel chapter 7, very terrible fourth beast, no animal form given to it. It's got a head with 10 horns. Three are cast down by the little horn. Notice verse 8. I was considering the horns, the 10, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there were in this horn eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. Now let's go forward to Daniel chapter 7, verse 20. And the 10 horns that are on its head, and the other horn, the little horn, which came up before which three fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth, which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than its fellow. This little horn in verse 21, I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them. And then it goes on to say, when Jesus Christ returns, that judgment is going to be brought against the little horn and that the kingdom is going to be given to the saints. Now, the little horn in Daniel chapter 8, verse 25, notice, last part of verse 25 of Daniel 8, he shall even rise his little horn against the prince of princesses. So this little horn is going to rise against Christ. Now he rises against, in verse 11, the little horn as high as a prince of the host. There's a prince of the host and there's the prince of princesses. And this is very interesting that it's mentioned two different ways in two different places. We're going to come back to that in a minute. Now, I want you to consider what the little horn does in 7 and in 8, Daniel 7 and 8. Makes war with the saints. The little horn makes war with the saints. The little horn casts truth to the ground, changes times and laws. The little horn fights Christ at his return. The little horn is destroyed by Christ when he returns. And the little horn is for the time of the end. The vision is for the time of the end. Now hold your place in Daniel chapter 7, Daniel chapter 8, those two pages. And let's go back to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2. In Daniel chapter 2, we have the 10 toes. Verse 41. Whereas you saw the feet and the toes partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, yet the strength of the iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. This is a union of Europe. And the union of Europe is going to be a political union, but there's so many cultures in Europe that it's not going to be a very strong political unification. What's probably going to unify it is religion, the great false church, which is what's unified Europe all down through the Middle Ages. Partly of iron and partly of clay, verse 42, so that the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. Verse 44, and in the days of these kings, which kings? The kings represented by the ten toes. The God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms. Just as much as you saw that the stone, which came out of heaven, the stone came out of heaven, and it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, the great God has made known to you what's going to happen. Notice in verse 34. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, obviously referring to Christ, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. You remember in hold your place there in Daniel. Let's go to Daniel chapter 8. Verse 25, he shall be broken without human means. If Jesus Christ comes down to earth and destroys the ten toes, that's pretty much without human means. So this little horn in Daniel chapter 9, Daniel chapter 8, the little horn in Daniel chapter 7, and the ten toes in Daniel chapter 2 all represent the same system. Now, they're not the same, but they represent the same system. The ten toes is a political union. The little horn is the leader of the political union. Now, in the Bible, we have what's called the beast. And we'll look at the beast in a minute. The beast is two things in the Bible. The beast is the political union or the nation or the kingdom. And the beast is also the leader. So when we talk about the beast, are we talking about the leader of the political entity? Or are we talking about the political entity itself? So the beast is two things in the Bible. The nation, the political structure, and the king of that structure. All right. Now, let's consider some things. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 8. And we're looking at Daniel chapter 8. The little horn, verse 9, the little horn, verse 11, what did it do? Middle part. And by him, the little horn, the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. So the little horn, which represents a king coming out of one of the kingdoms, one of the four, which we know as Antiochus Epiphanes. Antiochus Epiphanes causes the sacrifices to cease for 1,150 days. All right. Now, what happened, and let me just paraphrase history here for you. What happens is Antiochus Epiphanes, comes into the promised land with an army. And he invades Jerusalem. And he takes over the temple. And he is not a lover of the Jewish religion. He's a Hellenist. He's a Greek. So what he does is he takes a pig and he sacrifices the pig and places it on the altar. And then he gets as many of the scrolls of the law as he can, Bibles, books, scrolls, and he places them on all around the pig. Then he gets lard, pig fat, and blood and places it all on top of all of this. And he lights it. He sets a fire. This is the abomination of desolation, because this abomination makes the temple desolate. I mean, we hear abomination of desolation and we think of some esoteric term. Just break the word down. Something abominable desecrates the temple. So this pig and the offering desecrates the temple. And since the temple is desecrated, you can't offer sacrifices on it anymore. And this is done by Antiochus Epiphanes. The soldiers and their harlot camp followers would have orgies in the temple, further desecrating the temple. So Antiochus Epiphanes desecrates the temple. He institutes what's called the abomination of desolation. Now let me read you out of the book of Maccabees. Maccabees is not part of the Bible, part of the Catholic Bible if you're Catholic, but not part of most of our Bible. And I'm going to read you what Maccabees, 1 Maccabees, says about Antiochus Epiphanes, because what he did was written about historically. Now I'm going to be reading you selections out of Maccabees. 1 Maccabees chapter 1, verse 1. It happened after that Alexander, the son of Philip, the Macedonian, who came out of the land of Shittim, had smitten Darius, king of the Persians and the Medes, that he reigned in his stead, the first over Greece. And he made many wars and won many strongholds and slew the kings of the earth and went through the ends of the earth and took spoils of many nations. Verse 4, and he gathered a mighty strong host and ruled over countries and nations and kings. Verse 6, let me read you verse 7. So Alexander reigned 12 years and then he died. Verse 10. And there came up out of them a wicked root, Antiochus, surnamed Epiphanes, son of Antiochus the king, who had been a hostage at Rome. Another little story there. Let me kind of read you some of this here. In those days went there out of Israel wicked men, who persuaded many, saying, let us go and make a covenant with the heathen that are round about us. So, for since we departed from them, we have had much sorrow. So certain of the people were so forward herein that they went to the king, who gave them license to do the ordinance of the heathen. Whereupon they built a place of exercise at Jerusalem, according to the custom of the heathens. You know how the Greeks exercised? In the nude. Very obvious whether you were circumcised or not. If you went to the baths and the exercise gymnasium in the nude. Verse 20. And after that Antiochus had smitten Egypt, he returned again in 143rd year and went up against Israel and Jerusalem with a great multitude. He entered proudly into the sanctuary, took away the golden altar, the candles of light, and all the vessels therein, and the table of the showbread, and the pouring vessels, and the vials, and the censers of gold, and the veils, and the crowns, and the golden ornaments that were before the temple, all which he pulled off. So he sacked the temple. I'm skipping some parts here. Verse 41, moreover, King Antiochus wrote to his whole kingdom, which now included Jerusalem, that all should be one people. We all have to be one. We all got to be one. Can't be different. And everyone should leave his laws. So all the heathen agreed to, according to the commandment of the king. Yea, many of the Israelites consented to his religion and sacrificed unto idols and profaned the Sabbath. He forbid burnt offerings and sacrifice and drink offerings in the temple, and that they should profane the Sabbath and the holy days, and pollute the sanctuary and the holy people. He set up altars and groves and chapels of idols, and sacrificed swine's flesh and unclean beasts. That they should also, this is a king's decree, that they should also leave their children uncircumcised, and make their souls abominable with all manners of uncleanliness and profanation. Now, the 15th day of the month Cheslu, in the 145th year, they set up the abomination of desolation upon the altar. This is the thing I was talking about. And builded all idol altars throughout the cities of Judah on every side. And when they rent in pieces the books of the law which they found, they burnt them with fire. So they took the scrolls, they chopped them into pieces, and they burned them up. And when they had rent in pieces the books of the law which they found, they burnt them with fire. And whoever was found with any book of the Testament, or of any consented to the law, God's law, the king's commandment was that they should be put to death. Thousands were killed because they would not give up their religion. Thus did they by their authority unto the Israelites every month to as many as were found in the cities. At that time, according to the commandment, they put to death certain women that had caused their children to be circumcised. And they hanged the infants about their necks, rifled their horses, and slew them that had circumcised them. So if you were a rabbi, and you circumcise a Jewish baby, Antiochus' army would find you out, kill you, and they would kill the mother. They would kill the baby, hang it around the mother's neck, and then they would kill the mother. And they hanged the infants about their necks, rifled their houses, slew them that had circumcised them. Howbeit, many in Israel were fully resolved and confirmed in themselves not to eat any unclean thing. Wherefore, they chose rather to die, that they might not be defiled with meat, and that they might not profane the holy covenant. So then they died. And there was great wrath upon Israel. So what happened is Antiochus Epiphanes comes into the promised land, goes into Jerusalem, defiles the temple, and causes all the books of the law to be burned, and destroys anybody and kills anybody that is involved in circumcision. And wants the people to leave their traditions and laws and become all Hellenist. He wanted everybody to be one. Can you imagine what it would have been like to be alive in Israel at this time? And this is why it says the following. Verse 9 of chapter 8. And out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great towards the south, towards the east, and towards the glorious land. And it grew up to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. This is God's people. Antiochus Epiphanes cannot reach to heaven and cannot cast down angels. So this has got to be physical people. Bible often says you're going to shine like the stars in heaven. Verse 11, he even exalted himself as high as a prince of the host. Who's a prince of the host? The high priest of the people. And by him the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of the high priest's sanctuary was cast down. We've been reading about that in Maccabees. You can read about that in any good history book. It was a terrible time if you were a Jew and a member of Israel because you were killed. So this is what happened. Now, I want you to consider something. In the 15th day of Cheslev in 167 BC is when the abomination of desolation was set up. And it ended, the temple was cleansed in 164 BC on the 25th of Cheslev, around December the 14th, by the Maccabeans. That's why we have the book of the Maccabeans. The Maccabeans were the sons of the high priest that did not want to give in to Antiochus. So they led a rebellion against Antiochus' army, and they slowly won back the country. After 1,150 days, the sacrifices were reinstituted right on schedule. There's a tradition that says they went into the temple sanctuary and they were going to relight the candles. And they did not have enough oil to light. They had oil to fill the candelabra, but not enough oil for it to burn for 7 days. And it took 7 days for them to repurify more oil, because they had to purify the temple, cleanse it. And so this oil that was only going to be lit, only going to last for a day or so, burned for 7 days until they could remake some new oil and consecrate the temple. The Jews keep that day as Hanukkah, which is the festival of lights. That's where they get that from. And it ties in with Antiochus Epiphanes. Now, let's look at something. Let's go to Matthew 24. Keep your place in Daniel. Matthew 24. Now, there was one abomination of desolation that took place in the 160s BC. That was the one we can historically read about. In Matthew 24, notice what it says in verse 15. This is Jesus Christ, hundreds of years later, talking about the destruction of the temple and the coming of the end of the age. Verse 15, therefore, this is Christ speaking, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, what does it mean, the abomination of desolation? Antiochus Epiphanes set up a statue of Jupiter Olympus in the sanctuary, and that was a new god. So there was an image of an idol in the temple. Now, notice what Christ says. Very interesting. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation of spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, then you're supposed to flee. Now, wait a minute. This has already happened. It happened 190 years before, depending on how you look at the chronologies. So why would Christ say, when you see that happen? I mean, Christ, don't you know your chronology? It's already happened. It's going to happen again. That's why he said that.
Is that why he has, if you understand or follow my meaning kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. That's also why he tells the women, when the women are, he's going, taking his cross, his stake or his cross, and the women are crying, and he says, don't cry for me, cry for yourselves, because of what's going to happen to Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. Now, in 70 AD, something very interesting happens. In 70 AD, Vespasian, the general of the Roman army, is sent to Jerusalem to take care of the Jewish revolt. The Jews are a bunch of rowdy people. They don't like being occupied by Rome. So go destroy the city. Well, he's on the way to the city when there's some trouble that happens back in Rome, so he's recalled to Rome. A year later, in 70 AD, he sends Titus, which is another general. I think that was his son. But he sends another general, Titus, and Titus is going into the city. He's going marching towards the city. This is around the time of Pentecost. Josephus says that at this time, there was a lot of strange things that were happening. You could see, according to some people who were sitting on the city walls, you could see out into the clouds, and you could see, look like soldiers in the clouds running back and forth. And that all kinds of strange things were happening in Jerusalem. And the early New Testament church, the church fathers, they heard a voice coming out of the temple that said, remove you hence, which translated means you need to go and get away from here. So they rounded up the Christians, the apostolic Christians, and they left to go to Pella, and they were leaving Rome. As they were leaving Rome, Titus' army was marching in. They nodded to each other as they passed. Titus circles Jerusalem, destroys it. And you can read about what happened to the city in Josephus. Desecrates the temple. That's what Jesus Christ was talking about when it's going to happen again. But there's something very interesting. It's going to happen again. Let's go to Revelation chapter 13. Revelation 13. Do you remember I told you that there's the beast, and the beast can refer to the national name, and the beast can refer to the leader's name? Revelation chapter 13. Verse 11. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the sea, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. This is a counterfeit lamb. You know, you got a lamb's body and you're speaking like a dragon. Not a lamb. Something going on here. Remember it talked about sinister and not power but his own and all of that? This is a little horn being described here. He exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell in the world to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. The first beast is the Roman Empire. And there's a spiritual empire or a spiritual personage masquerading as a false church that tells the world to worship the beast, the Roman Empire. Verse 13, he performs great signs so that he makes fire come down from heaven on earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which is granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image of the beast that was wounded by the sword and lived. What is the image? What is a spiritual image of the Roman Empire? A spiritual image of the Roman Empire is a church called by the name of Rome. So this Roman church is patterned after the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire has had a papa, which was a emperor. The word means father. And so this false Roman church puts as its head a papa, a father. The false beast, this personage, which is satanic, tells the world to worship the spiritual copy of the Roman Empire. And the world has done that. Verse 15, he was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should speak and cause many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. What is the beast? The beast is the Roman Empire. What is the image? The copy? The icon? That's what the word is, icon. You've heard of icon? It means I want to be like you. The icon of the beast is the great false church that patterned itself after the Roman Empire. And it says, and the lamb dragon tells the world to worship the image, this church image of this Roman Empire. And if it's not, that the image would cause those people to be killed. So what happened in the Middle Ages if you didn't keep Sunday? If you didn't keep the church festivals, you were killed. The little horn is alive and well in the Middle Ages. Verse 16, he causes all, poor and small, both small and great, rich and poor, to receive a mark on their hand or in their foreheads. We'll go over the mark of the beast and all that later on. But this, the followers of this great false church were marked. They were marked. Now, we can read in other places in the Bible where Jerusalem is going to be surrounded by armies. Let's go to Zechariah. Zechariah. Zechariah, second to the last chapter, a book of the Old Testament. We're going to go to the last chapter in Zechariah. What is the theme of the book of Revelation? The theme of the book of Revelation is the day of the Lord. And I was in spirit on the Lord's day. Oh, that's Sunday, the Sunday keepers say. Oh, no. The Sabbath keepers say, that's the Sabbath, because Sabbath is the Lord's day. They're both wrong. It's not a day of the week. It's a time period. Mine has here in verse 1 of Zechariah 14, behold, the day of the Lord is coming. That's the same day of the Lord being spoken of in Revelation. Verse 2. I will gather all nations to battle against Jerusalem. And it goes on to describe what happens in this battle. Notice verse 3. The Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as he fights in the day of battle. In that day, he's going to return to earth because his feet are going to stand on the Mount of Olives. So in Zechariah 14, Jesus Christ returns. There's a great battle, and Jerusalem is surrounded by armies. So what's going to happen? There's going to be a great false religious leader that's going to arise, much like the little horn in Daniel chapter 7 and in Daniel chapter 8, and this great false religious leader, which is called the beast in the Bible, is going to persecute God's people, just like the little horn persecuted God's people. What happened to the political beast in Daniel chapter 2? It was destroyed by the rock when its feet were hit. What happens in Daniel chapter 8 to the little horn? It's destroyed when Christ returns. Let's go to Daniel chapter 11. Daniel chapter 11. We're touching on some tidbits here that we're going to cover later in more detail. But I got to set the stage. Daniel chapter 11. The beast power is also known in the Bible as the king of the north. So in your notes, if you're taking notes, political beast equals European Union equals United States of Europe equals king of the north. They're all the same. They're all different terms for the same. Now notice in Daniel 11, thank you. In Daniel 11, verse 40, at the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, the king of the north. Who is the king of the north? The coming United States of Europe. And the king of the north shall come against him. He's going to, in verse 40, he's going to overtake the king of the south. The king of the north is going to take care of the king of the south militarily. A lot of people wonder, how is the Muslim problem going to be taken care of? The Islamic problem with wanting to advance and conquer the world? King of the north is going to take care of him. It says right here in verse 40.
Germans and Italians.
Mm-hmm. Verse 41. He, the king of the north, shall also enter the glorious land. And some are going to come out, some are going to escape. In verse 40, the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver. Verse 44, but news from the north shall trouble him. Therefore shall go out with a great fury to destroy and annihilate many. And he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas, the Mediterranean Sea and Dead Sea, right around Jerusalem. He shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end and no one will help him. How do you think he's going to come to his end? We read about it. The stone striking the 10 toes. And various other places in the book of Revelation. So let's go back to Daniel chapter 8. So what we see in Daniel chapter 8 is we see a more detailed version of parts of the beast in Daniel chapter 7 and parts of the body's anatomy in Daniel chapter 2. It gives us details about the Medes and the Persians. It gives us details about the Greek kingdom. It talks a little bit about the little horn. And the little horn, there's a little horn that's Antiochus Epiphanes. And Antiochus Epiphanes is a type of the little horn that's going to be around at the time of the end, because they both do the same thing. So we're given some background information to the coming false religious leader that's going to be alive and well when Jesus Christ returns. And so Daniel chapter 8 gives us some overview of the Medes and the Persians, the Greeks, the little horn, and what's going to happen to them in the future. Now notice in 2 Thessalonians, final verse here, 2 Thessalonians. And there's a lot of things that we're going to cover, but we have to do this systematically, or else you won't understand if we don't lay the groundwork. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 1. Now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and the gathering together to him, we ask you. So what is the context? Jesus Christ's return. It's not, you know, what's going to happen to the churches before he returns. A lot of people say these apply to this great false prophet that came in the church a few years ago. No, it does not. Verse 2, not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled either by spirit or by a word or by a letter that supposedly comes from us, as though the day of Christ had already come. Some were saying, you know, Christ has already returned. Invisibly. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day, what day? The day of Christ's return will not come first, unless the falling away comes first and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition. Let me give you a hint. Little horn. Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. You know what Antiochus Epiphanes did? He put a false idol of stone into the temple. You know what's probably going to happen in the future? There's going to be some kind of temple complex, and a great false preacher, false ruler, false religious leader is going to say, I'm God, and I've come to the temple. So therefore, do what I ask you to do. And that's what's going to happen. Right here in 2 Thessalonians, we're reading about the time of the end, Jesus Christ's return, and that there's got to come a man of sin who is going to put himself as God into the temple. That's physically what's going to happen. And what we're reading in Daniel chapter 8 is the little premonitions of that. And you can't understand what's going to happen in Revelation until you understand what's happening in Daniel. In the next few sermons, we're going to delve into the book of Revelation, and then we're going to come back for a final look to the book of Daniel.